Good evening. This is the KRFP Evening Report for Tuesday, July 5th, 2011. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Miles of the Yellowstone River banks fouled by Exxon crude oil pipeline leak near Billings. Governor Schweitzer says the state of Montana is in charge. Forest Service brings in national law enforcement team for rainbow gathering in western Washington. And Boise State University opens new campus in Meridian. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. But first, world headlines from Feature Story News, Free Speech Radio News, and the International News Net. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. After first denying that an oil spill caused by the rupture of a 12-inch oil pipeline at the bottom of the Yellowstone River near Laurel, Montana, extended more than 10 miles, ExxonMobil Corporation is now acknowledging the spill is spreading over dozens of miles downstream towards and past Billings. ExxonMobil Pipeline Company President Gary Prusing caved to sharp criticism from Montana Governor Brian Schweitzer yesterday and said at a news conference near Laurel, Montana, that ExxonMobil crews would look for evidence of further spills when floodwaters recede on the Yellowstone River. Exxon officials revealed today for the first time to the public exactly where the Silvertip pipeline runs underneath the river. The pipeline carries crude oil from northern Wyoming to a company refinery at Billings and crosses just east of U.S. Highway 212 in Laurel. At another press conference with Governor Schweitzer and EPA officials this afternoon in Billings, Prusing told of the series of events shortly after the company's pipeline control center in Texas got errant readings from Montana at about 5 minutes before midnight Mountain Time on Friday night.
About midnight, he saw in the control center a pressure change. The operators went to try to investigate what was going on. They didn't fully understand it, so their solution was we just need to shut the line down. And you're right, that took about 6 minutes to make that decision. So the line was shut down. Then the next step was let's start closing the valves that are separate isolation valves along the line. So they started that process. The line was fully shut down and fully isolated. It probably took about 30 minutes to do all of the isolation valves. We actually identified the leak site with the help of the local police after we had had all those isolation valves closed. But the estimates that have been done on how much we actually probably spilled, the range of 750 to 1,000 barrels, those included a couple, the range of assumptions you might make on how fast the line actually drained after it was shut down. So we do feel confident that we probably capped the size of the spill. We don't think it's anything more than 1,000 barrels. We actually think it may be less, but we don't want to underestimate the response.
ExxonMobil Pipeline Company President Gary Prusing. Prusing said yesterday air and water monitoring had not revealed any health risks, and the only known damage to wildlife was a single dead duck, and even that was unconfirmed. The Billings Gazette ran pictures of a turtle and a group of pelicans, apparently with oil on them. Governor Brian Schweitzer said today the damage is significant.
You know, these microbes feed these insects that feed these fish and turtles. And so the question is, did we find a duck? If the response is, well, we found one, we found two, the answer to the question is, these pictures actually told us the answer to many of those questions, that those eddies are affected today, and there will be some level of effect for some period in the future.
Exxon says the pipeline likely broke after high waters from the spring runoff shifted riverbank soil near the town of Laurel and exposed the pipeline, making it vulnerable to flood debris carried downstream by the rushing water. The Billings Gazette website reports Exxon has 360 people in the Billings area working on the cleanup, including about 200 people who are actually along the banks of the Yellowstone River. Governor Schweitzer made it clear the state of Montana will have the ultimate say over how long the cleanup effort continues.
We've heard that EPA is the lead agency here. Well, they are the lead agency in coalition with the state of Montana. We're actually the client, the state of Montana, for all of the courts. And I can assure you this right now. The cleanup is done when the state of Montana says the cleanup's done. Not EPA, not ExxonMobil. It will be done when we say it's done. That's our responsibility, and not to just this generation of Montanans, but future generations.
Governor Schweitzer urged landowners downstream as far as Glendive near the North Dakota state line to walk the banks of the river and report oil sheens as soon as possible. He said if clumps of oil are found in 6 months, there may be some question as to who is liable, so it's important to document oil right now. He said landowners and others should get a GPS so they can report oil contamination locations accurately. Schweitzer did have words for the approximately 11 million visitors Montana has every year from other states.
We have a $400 million trout industry in Montana, and they're all concerned, obviously. We have 11 million people who visit Montana. For those 11 million people, know this. We have more blue ribbon trout streams than any other state in America. We have more than most of the western states combined. The Yellowstone is just one. This incident is far downstream from Yellowstone Park. It's far downstream from the upper trout fishery. In fact, starting after about where the Bighorn flows in, it's mostly other species of fish from there on down.
Montana Governor Brian Schweitzer at a press conference this afternoon in Billings. After a Monday news conference, Prising of ExxonMobil was confronted by Mike Scott, whose partner, Alexis Bonagovsky, experienced dizziness, nausea, and trouble breathing. At the emergency room, Bonagovsky was diagnosed with acute hydrocarbon exposure. After the confrontation, Prising pledged that he would try to provide the public with more information. The up to 1,000 barrels Exxon says may have leaked into the Yellowstone River is the equivalent of 42,000 gallons of crude oil. Twice last year, federal regulators warned ExxonMobil of safety violations along the 20-year-old Silvertip pipeline, which delivers 40,000 barrels of oil per day to the refinery at Billings. Last May, the line was temporarily shut down under pressure from Laurel City officials concerned about the integrity of the pipe as the Yellowstone began to flood. U.S. Department of Transportation spokesperson Patricia Klinger said the company had been notified last year of 7 safety violations, including 2 faulting the company for emergency response and pipeline corrosion training. However, Klinger said the company responded to the warnings and the case was closed. ExxonMobil was also cited for numerous probable violations in February, including portions of the line not properly protected against corrosion. The company responded to those concerns in March, and company spokesperson Alan Jeffers said there was no connection between previous citations and Saturday's spill. Natural Resources Defense Council policy analyst Anthony Swift told the Missoulian if ExxonMobil was in compliance with all federal rules, spills like this show those rules aren't strong enough. Trout Unlimited Montana Chapter Executive Director Bruce Farling explained as the river continues to rise and fall with the rate of mountain snowmelt, the oil is expected to be pushed into back channels, which are now full of fish eggs and recently hatched fish. A spokesperson for ExxonMobil Canadian subsidiary Imperial Oil told the Spokesman Review's Eye on Boise blog the company might send megaloads over both U.S. Highway 12 and U.S. Highway 95 in Idaho. Imperial Oil spokesperson Pius Rollheiser of Calgary said, given the delays we have already experienced and the schedule for the Curl project, we're looking at all options available to us. He was then asked by reporter Betsy Russell if that meant the loads would travel on both Idaho routes. Rollheiser answered, yes, it could. Rollheiser continued, it's very much our intent to move the disassembled modules on US 95 and I-90 east of Coeur d'Alene. At the same time, we're continuing to pursue permits for US 12. Obviously, we would like to move as soon as we can. Imperial Oil already has a travel permit for two split megaloads of tar sands oil equipment to travel up US 95 through Moscow and Coeur d'Alene on their way to the interstate highway system and eventually to the Alberta tar sands. They have said they intend on sending up to 66 of the split megaloads through Moscow. Imperial Oil also won a recommendation last week from an Idaho Transportation Department hearing officer that said the agency should issue permits to the company to ship 114 megaloads over U.S. Highway 12 into Montana. Those full-sized megaloads weigh up to 590,000 pounds and are 30 feet high, taking up both lanes of the highway where it's two lanes wide. The Highway 12 hearing officer, Duff McKee, his recommendation is subject to appeal, and intervener attorney Laird Lucas told KRFP last week his clients will probably file a motion for reconsideration. The U.S. Forest Service has sent a 30-person incident management team to the Gifford-Pinchot National Forest in western Washington to watch over the annual rainbow gathering. Forest Service spokesperson Christy Covington said, "It's an incident command system. It's a very organized, tried and true system that works." However, some of the several thousand who have come to the area from around the nation for the week-long campout celebrating peace and love say they are being harassed by Forest Service officers who are working three rotating shifts. Gary Stubbs said, "They treat us like terrorists. There have been arrests for drugs, but the gathering has remained peaceful so far," Skamania County Commissioner Paul Pierce, a former law enforcement officer, said. "If you're law enforcement in my community, you have to take your kids to the same school as those people you arrest. You're forced to police people with respect, and if you police people with respect, you will have fewer problems." Several people sleeping inside a church addition in Lewiston were rescued early this morning from a fire that engulfed a wing of the church. KLEW-TV reported the fire at Grace Lutheran Church began at about 2:30 a.m. Firefighters found fireworks debris outside the church, but have not yet cited a cause for the fire. Moscow firefighters had little rest over the holiday weekend. An unidentified local arsonist, or several, set seven fires in Moscow Sunday night and early Monday morning in dumpsters, garbage cans, and an outside bathroom. Moscow volunteer fire department training captain Jason Bluebaum said the fires were spread all over town, from the Early Childhood Learning Center at the University of Idaho to Lena Whitmore Elementary School, the Latah County Fairgrounds, and several city parks. Fireworks were a contributing factor in a separate blaze that destroyed a Notting Hill Drive home and three vehicles on the 4th of July yesterday, just before noon. Bluebaum said that apparently an object fell across the hot exhaust pipe of a car in a garage at the Notting Hill Drive location. That started a small fire that was spread by fireworks in the garage. Panhandle health officials have confirmed that five kitchen workers at Camp Luther Haven on the shores of Lake Coeur d'Alene have been diagnosed with E. coli poisoning. Health and safety inspectors declared the camp's food handling procedures not at fault and surmised the employees contracted the infection in their living quarters. No one has been hospitalized, and none of the campers seems to have been sickened. Nearly all of Washington Avista customers commenting to the Washington Utilities and Transportation Commission have voiced opposition to the utility's proposed gas and electric rate hikes. If approved, the hikes will add about $120 to a typical household's utility bill. Company officials blame aging infrastructure and expanding customer base and increased energy prices for driving up costs. Customers object to Avista's asking to raise the ceiling of shareholder profits to 10.9%. Avista Vice President Kelly Norwood maintains the company competes with other utilities for investors and a high return on their investments is necessary. Simon Fitch of the State Attorney General's Public Counsel section called Avista's recent string of yearly rate requests a, quote, revolving door approach to rate making. Filing a rate case every year is really very unusual and obviously very, very burdensome in this economy. We're hoping the commission will take a hard look at these things. You're listening to the KRFP Evening Report, and this is KRFP in Moscow. A U.S. District Judge in Tacoma is expected this summer to hear further arguments over the potential release of names of people who signed Referendum 71. The coalition Protect Marriage Washington has filed a motion asking the judge to prevent the release of the identities of the petition signers. The referendum, largely backed by conservative and religious groups, sought to repeal the 2009 state law that expanded marriage-like state benefits to gay and lesbian couples registered as domestic partners. In June, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled disclosing the identities of the petition signers would not violate their First Amendment rights. However, the court left open the possibility that further challenges could be made to the disclosure. However, Secretary of State Sam Reed, represented by Attorney General Rob McKenna, has asked the district judge in Tacoma to dismiss the group's new challenge and allow the signatures that backed Referendum 71 to be released under the Public Records Act. Those arguing for the 138,000 people who signed the petitions argued if their identities are released, they would be subject to harassment and threats. The Ada County Prosecutor's Office says it won't pursue charges against former Idaho Tax Commission Chair Royce Chigbrow for failing to deposit checks from a taxpayer in 2010. Deputy County Prosecutor Jonathan Medema, who works under Prosecutor Greg Bauer, said the statute of limitations on the accusations had expired despite the fact there was evidence of wrongdoing on the part of Chigbrow. Medema wrote, after reviewing an Ada County Sheriff's investigation, quote, there is no direct evidence of such a release, and while such an inference could possibly be drawn from other evidence, that inference is insufficiently compelling to support prosecution beyond a reasonable doubt. Medema also said Chigbrow declined to be interviewed during the sheriff's investigation. Chigbrow was also accused of providing confidential information collected by the tax commission to a friend and of receiving stolen checks amounting to more than $30,000. The county prosecutor's office said Friday there was insufficient admissible evidence of illegal activity on those two accusations. Chigbrow resigned from the tax commission when the charges surfaced in January. The confidential information charges stem from reports Chigbrow summoned tax commission employees to his office to give them confidential information about tax problems at Boise Food Service at a time when Chigbrow's friend Benton Skip Hofferber was suing Boise Food Service for wrongful firing. Medema wrote, there was evidence that a tax commission employee improperly handled checks from Boise Food Service, but the one-year statute of limitations had expired on the issue before prosecutors could adequately review what had happened. Medema said the check was ultimately applied to the correct account and nobody was harmed financially. Medema said it appeared that Hofferber was attempting to get information about tax collection actions against Boise Food Service, but it was impossible to determine whether Chigbrow actually gave the information to him. A jury Friday convicted former candidate for Governor Rex Rammel of unlawful possession of wildlife in a poaching case. The jury determined Rammel illegally killed a cow elk on December 8th. Magistrate Judge Stephen Clark sentenced Rammel to 180 days in jail with all but 5 days suspended. He also ordered Rammel to pay $1,500 in fines, but suspended $500 of the fines. Rammel said he did not get a fair trial and will appeal. Because of his appeal, Rammel's jail time will be stayed. Rammel received 5% of the vote in the Republican primary for governor in 2008. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Take a look at the weather from the National Weather Service. It'll be clear tonight with a low around 51 degrees, sunny high 86 tomorrow, increasing clouds, low 53 Wednesday night, 20% chance of showers and thunderstorms in the afternoon Thursday, otherwise partly sunny high 86, 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms before midnight Thursday night, mostly cloudy, low 53, west winds around 15, gusts up to 25 miles per hour. Then a string of clear weather Friday through Tuesday with high of 72 on Friday and Saturday, 77 on Sunday, and 80 on Monday and Tuesday next week. Lows in the upper 40s. Currently, we have 81 degrees in Moscow, sunny skies. Thanks for tuning in to the KRFP Evening Report. Coming up next is Change Surfer Radio, followed by Flashpoints, the daily investigative news magazine from Pacifica Radio. And we got music with Justin and Gary Lange coming up at 7:30. At 9 o'clock, episode 5 of The Fourth Tower of Inverness. And at 9:30, we'll have the Deadhead Show on KRFP Moscow. I'm Lee Robartis. Nancy Casey assisted with tonight's newscast. Coming, if you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, be sure to donate to Radio Free Moscow. Memberships are $35 a year, $25 for students. You can mail your memberships to Radio Free Moscow, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. That's 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or you can check out how to donate on the web. Have a good night. This is KRFP in Moscow.